Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you.
Today's special guest is Christy Campbell, Cole County Health Department Director. Hello, Christy.
Good morning.
So Christy and I are putting this podcast on together, but she's actually at her office there in Cole County Health Department, and I am here at the News Tribune newsroom. We apologize, first of all, if the sound quality is a little bit less, but we just appreciate the opportunity to sit down with Christy and have a conversation. So from the early days of the novel coronavirus pandemic in the United States, Cole County Health Department has been the source of information for how Cole County's been impacted and how it's responding to the pandemic. So Christy, how many tests have been conducted within the county so far?
So far, at our three facilities that are doing testing, which is Capital Region Medical Center, St. Mary's, and the Jefferson City Medical Group, they have tested 1,126 clients. Keep in mind that not all of those would be Cole County residents, because those three facilities really have about a 7-county service area. So with those 1,126 tests, they're not just Cole County residents.
Okay. So how many positive tests in Cole County have there been? How many recoveries and how many deaths?
Okay. So from those, I want to say from those three facilities I just talked about, mm-hmm. there's been a total of 50 positives. 32 have been Cole County residents.
Okay.
And right now we have 14 that are recovered. So 17 active cases that we are monitoring. We check on those individuals every day. And then we have, unfortunately, had one death.
Okay. So explain to folks how the health department's notified of a positive case, what investigations and directions then come from the health department. So in short, if a person tests positive for COVID-19, what does your department do with the case?
Sure. So once we're notified, we could get notified from the lab because it is mandated that they report, or we could get notified from the hospital. And then we also get notifications from the positive tests from the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services. Once we get notified, we do contact the person who tested positive to make sure that they know, which typically they've been notified by their provider already. And then, but if not, we do let them know they have tested positive. And then we talk to them about being quarantined, what is expected of them. We do issue them an order of quarantine, so they have it in writing, what is expected of them during this time that they're ill, and how we would go about releasing that quarantine, what requirements there are of that. And then we talk to them about when they started their symptoms and who they were around. And we could even go back, you know, probably 48 hours before they started showing those symptoms. And we talked to them about who they were around, who they came in close contact with, because that is the way the virus is spread. It's that close contact within 6 feet for a prolonged time, like 10 to 15 minutes. And we get the names and phone numbers of those individuals so we can contact them. Hmm. And when we contact those contacts, we don't tell them who they were around that could have exposed them. We would just contact them and let them know that we were given their name as someone who could have been potentially exposed to COVID-19. And we talk to them about the risk factors. We talk to them about, you know, isolating themselves and observing that physical distancing, and we talk to them about what kind of signs and symptoms to look for. That way, if they start to feel ill themselves, they know exactly what to do.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What are some of the symptoms that that are associated with COVID-19? And then maybe also explain what quarantine would look like, what you're telling folks when you say, hey, you've tested positive, you now need to be in quarantine for 14 days, I believe?
Actually, the incubation period is 2 to 14 days. So if someone travels, that's why we're recommending that if someone travels, they stay home and stay away from people for 14 days because it might take that long for the symptoms to show.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in quarantine, it's more about their symptoms. So CDC recommends that they stay in quarantine for 72 hours after their last day of fever or symptoms. And then and if it's been 7 days since they tested positive and they've been symptom and fever free for 72 hours, we would count them as being released from quarantine.
Okay.
The original guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was that they had to have 2 negative tests, but they're not requiring that anymore. Now it's as long as you're 7 days after your positive test and you've been symptom and fever free for 72 hours, you can be released from that quarantine.
Okay.
And the main symptoms that we've been told to look for coronavirus is the fever and a cough, and when it gets more serious, that shortness of breath.
Okay.
But it's really that fever and a cough that you want to look for coronavirus. And, you know, it is confusing because some of the symptoms definitely mimic the seasonal flu.
Mm-hmm.
And although the seasonal flu usually have aches and pains and fatigue and some exhaustion, you know, you generally feel like you've been hit by a truck, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the time with coronavirus, people are telling us they have less of those aches and pains and fatigue. It's more the fever and the cough.
Okay. And is the cough a wet cough, a dry cough? I've heard both ways.
It is a dry, persistent cough.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like there's a lot of resources expended by the health department. I mean, if you're calling the folks who have tested positive as well as those who may have come in contact with them. So how big is your staff and how long does a quote investigation take?
So in total, we have 22 staff here at the health department, but many of them are not nurses because we have, you know, the Women's, Infants, and Children program, commonly known as WIC. We have that program. Mm-hmm. And then we also have environmental public health specialists that do inspections and food establishments and daycares and hotels. So we have 7 nurses right now. We have 1 empty position. We are waiting to fill that. So we have 3 or 4 main nurses that work on COVID-19, and the other nurses have been helping out answering the phones because we are getting so many calls about testing and symptoms and people just asking general questions about our orders and other things. So each investigation, it depends. You know, if someone traveled and they came home right away and they self-quarantined because they knew that they had been to a place where COVID-19 was very prevalent and they haven't been in contact with anyone since they came home, well, it's a pretty short investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But if they didn't realize they were exposed and they, you know, worked and didn't know even, you know, when they became sick, they might have thought, oh, it's just allergies, I'm fine. Or or maybe, you know, as soon as they started feeling those symptoms, they went home, but they had been at work. And then, you know, it does take more time to contact all those individuals that the person came in contact with. So the investigation really just, it depends on the person.
Yeah, okay. From those first cases that have been reported in Cole County and as well as in Missouri, the identity and gender of the person who's tested positive has not been disclosed. What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, of course, you know, because of HIPAA and trying to protect everyone's personal private information, we have not released that. And of course, you know, in bigger cities, once you get a big number of cases, it's easier to release some of the age or gender data because you can make generalizations or group them by age group, especially when you have a lot in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have fewer cases in an area our size, it's better to not release any information because if we said, oh, well, we have, you know, 1 17-year-old and 2 20-year-olds and a 30-year-old, well, you know, if someone knows someone that's sick, it's very easily identifiable for them to pick out that person and know that that's who it is and you know, I saw so-and-so with a mask, and they have one smart 17-year-old positive, it must be them.
Right.
So we have to be very careful about protecting personal information of our clients.
I understand, yeah. It strikes me when you were saying that, it reminds me of early on with the COVID cases nationally and even maybe internationally, a lot of the focus was, you know, if you're young, it really doesn't matter. You'll be fine. And so folks kind of ignored some of the guidelines there of, you know, six social distancing or physical distancing and things like that. And so I think I understand what you're saying. There's really not enough data yet to really, that the gender or the identity will really help that much. And as far as protecting people.
Right. Right.
In Cole County and now in Missouri, a stay-at-home order exists. In Cole County, how did this order come about, and who's responsible for enacting it and then enforcing it?
In Cole County, we had been talking about what the next steps were for us. The city and county leadership stood up, is what we call an emergency operations center, over a month ago, just so we could have those discussions about how we will respond in Cole County, what the first responders' response will look like, what kind of personal protective equipment they needed to wear, what happens when someone calls 911, what happens when we get a case. We have a great team of leaders here in the city and the county who work very well together, and I feel very blessed to have them. And as we started the discussions about, you know, what happens with first responders, what happens when we get our first case, how do we respond to these issues, you know, we looked to the other big metropolitan areas in the other states that were farther down the road from us, and we saw the things that they were doing. So we knew that at some point, you know, we've been striving to follow CDC's recommendations. We knew we'd have to start restricting the size of gatherings. And then the next step seemed to be the restaurants, and then the next step, once you get community spread, is really that stay-at-home order.
Mm-hmm.
And that week, you know, I kept wondering, you know, when is the time to enact this? We want to be proactive and stop the spread, not be reactive, but not overreact either. There's a fine line between doing everything you can to protect the community, but not restricting them too far too fast because of the other impacts of doing something like a stay-at-home order.
Sure.
So a lot of discussion and facts and deliberation went into making that decision, and we felt like that week of that last week of March, when we had like 200 tests pending from the three facilities, that we didn't know what the outcome was going to be. We did have evidence of community spread. And then we knew that even though it was not advised, people had traveled for spring break that week. And we knew that travel is such a high risk factor. So when they came home, we needed them to stay home for the next 2 weeks and not be out and about in the community and potentially spreading COVID-19 if they picked it up while they were out traveling. So we felt like it was the best time to do that. Under my authority, under state statute and the Code of State Regulations, gives the health department directors the authority to enact an order like that. So the health department, under my authority, did enact that order. And then it is up to the local law enforcement, who have been great partners with us, to enforce that order.
Okay. So this week, the state itself enacted a stay-at-home order. What does that mean for a Missouri resident?
Well, for Missouri residents that already did not have a city or county order, it means they need to stay at home unless they're accessing essential businesses or going out for essential activities. For the counties and cities that already had their own stay-at-home order, it's not a big change because it did not supersede our order. The governor did add some additional requirements for those essential businesses about how many people they can have in there based on their square footage and their fire code.
Mm-hmm.
So it did put some additional requirements on, but it didn't take away from what those city and counties already had in place, because he said that they are cities and counties are allowed to be more restrictive than his statewide order.
Okay. So under both of these orders, Missouri and Cole County, it will allow you to go to an essential business, drive-through restaurant for food, gasoline, hardware store, grocery store. But you can also go to like a park as long as you're physically not congregating. Is that accurate?
Correct. We want to encourage people to get out and be active and exercise and get out in the sunshine and the warm weather when we have it. That's going to help with some of the mental and aspects of the stay-at-home order, because we know that it is very detrimental to some people's mental well-being to be, you know, at home, and it's good for you to get out and get exercise. So we definitely still want to encourage that. We don't want to take away from people being able to be physically active, for sure.
Okay. So as I said before, the county's been under a stay-at-home order for more than a week. How has compliance been with the order, and are there some issues where we could have done better?
In general, most of the businesses and people, I think, are compliant and they want to do the right thing. There have been some businesses that questioned whether or not they were essential, and we did make a essential business determination form on our website to make that easier for my staff to review if they, you know, definitely qualified for one of the provisions or exemptions in the stay-at-home order. It was an easy determination. I think that maybe things that we could have done better was just if there's any ambiguities in the order to clean those up a little bit. We got a lot of the language from other counties, and there were still a lot of questions about, well, does this qualify, does that qualify? But, you know, as the governor kept saying in his speeches, it is really hard to write an order like that and make sure you cover everything and protect everything with such a diverse community that we have in Cole County, and I imagine he really struggled trying to write a one-size-fits-all approach for the entire state.
Yeah, you have metro areas of hundreds of thousands, and as well as very rural areas, it would be impossible. So,
right.
What are some measures that we can take personally to minimize our risks of contracting COVID-19?
Well, I think that anything that people do for COVID-19 is probably applicable for all other viruses. You know, wash your hands, cover your cough and sneezes. Be careful when you're around other people that are sick. If you're sick, stay home. That is the biggest one. If you have a fever, it doesn't matter if it's from COVID-19 or strep or seasonal influenza. You need to stay home because you're contagious. And take care of yourself. You know, if you are washing your hands and being conscious of what you're touching and not touching your face and spreading those germs, you're going to be healthier all the time, not just when there's a new novel virus that we don't know much about. You know, seasonal influenza is still, we're still seeing flu cases right now. So anything people can do to just practice really good hand hygiene and be cognizant of who they are around and what they're touching and you know, covering coughs or sneezes or things like that is going to help protect you from any virus at any time of the year.
Okay. One of the things that it seems like I never get a clear understanding just personally, should we be wearing masks? I've heard both ways.
You know, I have heard both ways too because CDC and the president came out and said everyone should be wearing masks. Well, and then I have a lot of people saying, well, is that just in New York? Is it here? I've heard that the masks, you know, unless they are fit tested and form fitted for your face, they might not keep everything out from coming into your nose or mouth. But if you wear a surgical mask or one of the cloth masks, if you're sick, it's going to keep you from spreading it to other people. So I would say if you are sick and you have to go out, whether it's seasonal influenza or whatever, if you have to go somewhere like to the doctor, please do wear a mask, because then whatever you have, you're not spreading it to other people. And if you're concerned, you know, about breathing other stuff in, the mask certainly wouldn't hurt. It might not protect you from everything, depending on the size of the particle and what kind of mask you're wearing. but it would certainly be better than nothing.
What about gloves? Should we be wearing plastic or nylon gloves?
Well, I think that that's another thing, too. You know, everyone says wash your hands, wash your hands. I think that if people feel better, you know, going to the grocery store and touching things with and wearing gloves, they should do so. But they need to realize that they're not magic gloves. You can't touch your money and then touch your face. You know, if you touch something with the gloves, you need to take them off properly to not get anything on your hands. And then you need to, you know, probably be cognizant of what you touched before or after, you know, wash your hands before you put the gloves on. So proper use of the gloves and masks are just as important as to whether or not you should wear them, because, you know, I saw a funny picture of someone who was wearing a mask and gloves. He had the mask down and he was feeding himself Cheetos with the gloves. No, that's probably not so helpful, right? They're not magic gloves. And he was seeing me in line at a grocery store. So that kind of defeated the purpose of the masks and the gloves. So if you're going to use those things, make sure you use them properly. Otherwise, they're not going to help you.
Good point. Very good point. Okay, so from your position as health department director, what are some of the biggest challenges we're going to be facing going forward from here?
One of the challenges, I think, will be kind of easing back into normal routines and when to ease the restrictions. And I think that people will want to just jump back into normal life. And I think that we might need to ease off the restrictions slowly, sort of like we eased into them. Mm. And I think people being patient in realizing that it didn't get here overnight and it's not going to go away overnight. We need to be patient and keep doing the things that we're doing because our case count is low and we want to keep it that way. So we can't stop doing the good things that we're doing. And then I think that there's been a lot of discussion and talk about it coming back in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I think that we will be hopeful that some people will have developed an immunity to it, and they might even have a vaccine for it. But I think people are going to have to realize that it's probably not gone forever, and we're going to have to deal with it, unfortunately, again. And, again, it's that patience and perseverance and keep doing what we're doing, not to give up.
Okay. So do you have any words of encouragement or suggestions for our listeners today?
Well, I think something very encouraging is that we've had 32 cases in Cole County, of a county that's 76,000 people. And of those 32, 14 are already recovered. So I think that that is great news that we have a low case count and that we have many cases that are recovered. And we have great partners here that are doing everything we can to keep the community safe, and we just need people to do their part by staying home and taking care of themselves and maybe enjoying this quiet time, not hoarding food. I know many have talked about that, you know, being kind to others and realizing that we'll get through this and we'll learn a lot from it, and we'll keep doing everything that we're doing to keep people safe.
All right, Christy. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you.
I want to share some of the ways that we're trying to cover the community's response to the COVID-19 threat. On our website, we've created some general announcement pages where cancellations and announcements from businesses and government are being listed. We're updating the site regularly through the day with information, both locally and regionally, as it comes into us. If you have a print subscription, I'd encourage you to activate your digital subscription so that you can stay up to date as we update our news report throughout the day. From a coverage standpoint, we've pulled all of our coronavirus stories from behind our paywall. We see that as a public service so that you can be engaged and make informed decisions for yourself and for your family. At times like this, information is vital to the public safety. To that end, our mission is to provide that information to you. For us, it's a 365-day mission. I'd encourage you to consider subscribing to the News Tribune to help us fulfill that mission. You're not only investing in your community newspaper, but in your community itself. As always, we do welcome your story ideas or questions. You can send them to news@newstribune.com. Be safe, be informed, and wash your hands.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.